Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
Support for WPR comes from the Stevens Point area, offering a variety of getaway experiences, itineraries, and ideas for beer lovers, foodies, outdoor recreation fans, and more are at StevensPointArea.com.
992. Do you frequently argue with someone you love, or with a friend or work colleague for that matter? Do you have the same conflict over and over again? We'll find out the best and least effective ways to make up after an argument this hour. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, July 16th. We'll discuss the five steps to a successful makeup with our guest psychologist, and we'll welcome your questions and your experiences. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Hal Shorey, an associate professor in the Institute for Graduate Clinical Psychology at Widener University, where he directs the Psychology and Business Joint Degree Program. He runs a private practice where he provides psychotherapy to individuals and couples and helps business people with their relationships at work. Professor Shorey was interviewed for a column about resolving arguments that was published recently in the Wall Street Journal. That column and his five steps to successfully resolve an argument is posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So what's the most important thing for us to understand when it comes to conflict?
The first thing is that conflict shouldn't be avoided. It's something that needs to be managed. As a matter of fact, in organizations, if an organization or a business has no conflict, they'll actually intentionally shake things up a little bit to interject conflict. So conflict keeps the system active and alive. It keeps us adapting and growing, and it keeps us moving forward together in our relationships. If you have no conflict, there's no motivation for people to change.
So it's normal, and there's not something wrong with us if we bicker or argue or have a disagreement with someone, especially someone we love.
That's right. As a matter of fact, the misconception and the false expectation that when you're in love and you have a wonderful relationship, there shouldn't be any fights is actually the source of conflict itself a lot of times.
Really? So, oh no, I'm going to get psychoanalyzed on the air right now. So if my husband and I don't have arguments, we'll have some disagreements, but we don't really have arguments over and over again or constantly, is there something wrong?
No, there's not necessarily anything wrong unless there are unresolved issues and you're not happy because of that.
All right. So what is the foundation? What's the root of conflict?
The root of conflict is usually emotion regulation. So people don't see this, but the way we're socialized in our family of origin when we're kids has a lot of implications for the way we characteristically think, feel, and behave into adulthood. So what people do is when they get into a conflict, they have an issue, something happens, and then they have an emotional reaction. And how they regulate that emotional reaction governs their behavior, how quickly they come down after the argument, and how well they're able to listen to other people.
Mm-hmm. What about unmet needs?
Unmet needs are huge. And oftentimes, you'd be surprised. People often don't know what they need. So when I'm working with a couple, I often will sit back and actually watch them argue for a little bit so I can get their style down and see what they're doing. And when there's a pause or when I call break, I'll ask them, what do you need from your partner right now? And you'd be surprised, most people cannot answer that question if they're not practiced at this and haven't thought about it before. So one of the key things, if you're getting into arguments with your spouse or your partner, your friend, your boss, is to think about what do you need from that other person. And as a matter of fact, you might think about what the other person needs from you. A lot of times what the other person says they want or need isn't necessarily the key issue.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we're actually trained not to say what we really need, especially in the workplace.
Can you give us an example?
Yeah, sometimes if, let's say you're in a meeting, And this happens. I work at a university. It's governance by committee. You have a lot of committee meetings. Let's say you have a meeting and somebody's often objecting to the decisions that are being made, the policies being put forward, and they're often very activated and very vehement. And it's not just one issue. It keeps on recurring. I've seen that happen a lot of times. Most groups, most organizations, most families have that naysayer. And sometimes if you sit back, you can really start to feel irritated with that person. But if you start to think, wait a minute, this is recurring across contexts in a lot of different situations. It's not just one issue. This person must have a need that's not being met, or this behavior wouldn't keep on repeating itself. What might this person need from me, from us, from the group that they're not getting? And oftentimes it's feeling cared for, feeling respected, feeling valued. And if you can give that to the person, oftentimes the person will come off the actual piece of what they're talking about and focus on the real issue. Because we're often taught, and this depends on our culture at work or in our family, that if someone hurts our feelings, not to come out and say, hey, what you said really, really kind of injured me and hurt me. We're taught not to do that. And so what we do is we say, I don't like what you said. We focus on the details of what was said or specifics of what happened, and we miss the underlying issue, which is often an emotional insult.
I know that naysayer.
We all do.
Yeah. And so if the naysayer at the meeting is, that's not going to work. This is the way we should do it. This is the way we've always done it. If you acknowledge, well, yes, that, you know, that way might really work, but however, you know, the budget won't allow it, or at least give some reason why you're dismissing that suggestion, that might make that person feel respected.
If you can listen, first of all, can enable you to have more compassion and not be irritated. So when you respond, you're likely not to have that edge in your voice. And this is in any relationship. You're not likely to have the edge in your voice. That reactance that other people pick up on. You know, we don't often realize, but there's communication happening, especially when you're face-to-face, not necessarily on social media. So this breaks down a little bit when you don't have the in-person contact. But when you're face-to-face, our right brains are synchronizing with each other. So the right brain's nonverbal. You have nonverbal back-and-forth emotional communication. We're actually reading the other person. So people know at some level when you're agitated and irritated with them, even if you're trying not to say it. So you need to focus on the emotional piece. If you don't have that activation because you're able to have some compassion and understand what the other person might be striving for, then you don't have to have that. You can remain calm. You can remain patient. You can really take the time to make sure you got what they mean, not necessarily just the surface aspect of what they say.
Do men and women differ when it comes to conflict?
They do, but I have to give a caveat there that it's a gross generalization. So let me just put that first, that a lot of this research, and I'm a psychologist, I specialize in personality development, a lot of the research is done on groups of people. So we do research on groups of people, but then we generalize to the level of the individual and say, well, this individual, this man, this woman is likely to behave like that. That's a probability. There's always going to be, it's always going to be different at the level of the individual. At the base level, on average, men are what's called more avoidant or dismissing of intimacy than women. That's the science, the body of research on this says that that's not biological. It's actually socialized. So it's really how you're raised in your family of origin, how you're taught to regulate emotions, how to speak about emotions, or how to not speak about emotions. So given that many men are still socialized as little boys, don't cry, suck it up, don't express vulnerability, don't say you're sad. If you get picked on the playground and you come home and say, Johnny picked on me, I'm sad, I feel really hurt, you know, dad or mom might say, you go out there and you tell Johnny what you think. You get tough. And what we're doing when we do that, even though it seems so subtle, is we're giving the message that your sadness and your vulnerability isn't okay. So if you come to me with it, I'm going to shut you down. So the kid will learn very quickly, one, never to express hurt, fright, or anger directed toward the parent. Two, if you do see something that hurts your feelings or upsets you, try to stuff it or ignore it, or don't ever see it in the first place. So it's really subtle. People often grow up and say, my childhood was great, nothing happened. And the answer is, yes, it was. But these subtle patterns across 18 years, you're going to end up with a young adult going to college who's actually subtly emotionally blind, who's going to ignore social cues, who's going to be avoidant of strong negative emotions like sadness, neediness, upset. And so they can't tolerate it in themselves. And so when they see that happening in their partner, the partner wants to talk, the partner wants to get into a discussion, talk about their real deep issues, talk about feelings, their emotional system actually shuts down, and they're going to find themselves pulling away. What you're likely to get is a really quick apology and a quick, okay, I'm sorry, I was a jerk, can we get over it and just get on with it now and get back to... I often hear couples say, the spouse and a couple will say, can we just get back to normal now?
Yeah.
And what happens is the issue hasn't been resolved. That person was just avoiding negative emotions, so they're conflict-averse. So that's a classical male style. There are a lot of women who have that style too, though. Women tend to be more anxious in relationships. We call that preoccupied. And again, there are a ton of preoccupied men too. And that's the opposite pattern. When they're kids, they're given double messages a lot of times. Maybe you have a really cranky parent. Sometimes it's you come home from school and you get a big hug and, honey, I love you. And other times you come home from school and you get, mommy's in a bad mood or daddy's in a bad mood. Go to your room. So the kid never knows what they're going to get. Sometimes it's good affection. Sometimes it's rejection. The rejection really hurts. So they're going to become like little chameleons. When they come in the house, they're going to monitor and scan their parent for their subtle emotional cues. They can change their behavior accordingly, ask for the hug or not. And again, if you do that kind of behavior across 18 years, you're going to end up with a young adult who's preoccupied with relationships, is really sensitive to social cues, and picks them up even before the level of conscious awareness, has strong emotional reactions, comes down really slowly, and really addresses conflict by approaching the problem and talking it through. So the avoidance style, which is more men, tends to be avoidant of those deep discussions and shutting down. And that's a neurobiological process. People aren't doing this on purpose. It's an automatic emotional response. And on the other hand, with preoccupied style, which is slightly skewed in the favor of women, you have people who want to approach the problem and talk it through, and that's how they come down. And unfortunately, especially in couples, you usually see that pairing.
Oh, I believe it. Well, we will take a short break, and then when we come back, we will discuss the five steps to a successful makeup with our guest psychologist. And we do welcome your questions. We welcome your experiences. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
992.
So do you have 992 arguments with someone you're in a relationship with? Do you have the same conflict over and over again? We are talking about the best and the least effective ways to make up after an argument during this hour. And we are welcoming your questions for our guest psychologist and welcoming your own suggestions. How do you make up with someone after an argument? Is it effective? Do you have a partner who might just want to apologize and move on, and do you never quite get to the root of the conflict? Let us know your questions and experiences, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Or maybe you have a relationship at work where you're in conflict with one of your colleagues, and you might need some advice on how to deal with that. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Our guest is Hal Shorey, an associate professor in the Institute for Graduate Clinical Psychology at Widener University, where he directs the Psychology and Business Joint Degree Program. He also has a private practice where he provides psychotherapy to individuals and couples, and he also helps businesses with their relationships at work. And we found out about him in a recent column in the Wall Street Journal, the Bonds column, and it was a column on how to successfully resolve arguments and the best way to make up after an argument. And he has five steps that that we should follow to successfully make up. And let's talk about those five steps, Professor Shorey. So, wait to talk until you're both ready. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so number one, listen. Sometimes when we're emotionally activated, it's hard. So especially when something happens in an interaction, a discourse, and you feel an emotional reaction, you need to make sure you take a breath and take the time to listen to what the other person's actually saying. So my wife's an expert on this with me. And she'll often say, if I just parrot back to her what she said, she'll say, great, you repeated my words, now tell me what I mean. Don't listen to what I say, listen to what I mean. So we need to make sure we understand what the other person means before we speak.
All right. So, but when it's wait to talk, I assume that this is also, you've had the argument, but you don't want to have, you don't want to say, you know, well, let's talk about this if somebody is still hot under the collar.
Exactly. So you want to gauge it based on, you have to understand the other person you're dealing with. So if the other person calms down really quickly and you're making sense because you're not too activated, then you can have that discussion right away. Oftentimes, the system is still hot. Hot emotions hijack our thought processes, make us say and do things that we wouldn't normally do that aren't necessarily in our best interest. So it's often better to get clear on what you want to happen and not base it on your emotions, but base that on what you want the outcome to be.
Mm-hmm. Number two, give up the idea of being right. Uh-oh.
That's a big one. We all know it. If we're in a relationship, a romantic relationship of long term, or at work with our boss, we want to make sure we're not taken right, people don't misunderstand us, and we stand our ground. Sometimes I see people having conflicts, and they're standing their ground when it really wouldn't hurt not to necessarily do that. So it's important to say your piece and speak your truth, but then you need to realize that other people might not see our truth the way we do. So we might believe in our rightness, but they might not. And sometimes we need to accept that. We also need to realize that emotions are never wrong. So even if we feel that we didn't do anything wrong, it doesn't mean that the other person's emotions aren't a normal reaction based on what they're seeing of the situation. So we can't say you don't have a right to feel the way you do because I didn't do anything wrong. And that's irrelevant at that point. So if the other person's having a strong emotion and you say, I don't have a problem, the other person has a problem, well, if your interaction is with that person, you have a problem too.
Yeah.
So it's really important to give up the idea of being right. Don't focus on the details necessarily, but on the substance, especially if you're a couple in an argument.
Yeah, so help me out with this one too. So let's pretend I'm in an argument with my husband. I'm mad because he never calls when he's going to be late from work or something along those lines. And I, you know, I'm crying about this, and I'm very upset by this because I don't know, the dinner got cold, and so he says, well, you know, you don't understand. I, you know, my boss hauled me in the office. I couldn't really contact you, and I didn't do anything wrong. Quit getting so upset. My job's important. So, what's a better way to deal with this?
Yeah, that's usually that can be a starting point of a pretty long drawn out argument, actually. Because what also happened is, excuse me, you might say that you're upset that he didn't call. He might give you that excuse and then say, and I don't not call that often. I'm usually pretty on the ball. And then you might respond with a counter example and say, well, that's not true because you did it last Wednesday too. And then he might say, well, last Wednesday, that is not what happened. I did this. And then you say, you did not do that. You did this.
Mm-hmm.
And before you know it, you're 10 minutes down the line. Both people are challenging each other's examples and whether they're accurate and what was said and who did what. And the actual issue of that maybe you felt, and this would be the key thing. It's not that he didn't call. It's what message did you receive from that? I'm not prioritized. I'm not valued. The person puts other things in front of me. That might be the issue. And so we fight about the details, and we never actually get to the underlying issue.
Yeah. So I should realize that why I am upset is that he didn't put me first.
Yes. Yep. And that's one of those things where we're kind of taught, even through childhood, not to say that because it makes us seem needy. So we're going to try to cover it up, and since we can't say that directly or we're taught not to, we focus on the details of what the other person said or did, and then they get defensive and defend that, and we're off to the races.
Yeah, and we have just a minute before our news break, so we won't get to all the rest of the five steps until after news. But in resolving this conflict and to successfully make up after this conflict, I realize that, oh, gee, you know, I get why I'm so upset here. I'm still mad that he didn't call. What's his step in resolving this?
His step, so my third step is mirror. But by mirroring, it doesn't mean you just repeat back what the other person said. It means you actually show them you get what they mean. That word, what he would take the time to see if he can decenter and think, what might she be responding to? Why is she upset? And to say, look, I'm sorry. You're really important to me. I don't want you to ever feel that I put other stuff ahead of you. And I hope that through the body of my actions, you understand that I really care, and you're number one, and I'm sorry I did that.
Excellent. We will continue talking about the five steps to successfully make up after an argument after we check the latest news.
992.
We are talking about the best and least effective ways to make up after an argument. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we are discussing the five steps to a successful makeup with our guest psychologist. And we are welcoming your experiences and your questions. Is there someone at work that you're always in conflict with? Do you want to tell us about it so we can try to help work out that conflict? Or have you found a way to successfully make up with someone after an argument? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest was featured in a column about resolving arguments that was published yesterday in the Wall Street Journal. That column and his five steps to successfully resolve an argument is posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. He is Hal Shorey, an associate professor in the Institute for Graduate Clinical Psychology at Widener University, where he directs the Psychology and Business Joint Degree Program. He runs a private practice where he provides psychotherapy to individuals and couples and helps business people with their relationships at work. And I guess we just have a bunch of people listening right now who never get into arguments with anybody because our lines are open. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We do have Gary on Facebook who writes, maybe tongue-in-cheek, but I think we can talk about this a little bit. Except for sex, it is normally better for men and women to just avoid each other since one is totally incomprehensible to the other. So, Professor Shorey, what about that?
That's great. Well, it depends on who's incomprehensible to who.
Yeah.
So most of my women would say the men are incomprehensible, and most of the men would say the women are incomprehensible. And, of course, I want to put a caveat here that we're speaking about in terms of romance. You know, there are a lot of couples who aren't strictly heterosexual. So if I use heterosexist examples, just forgive me there. No, oftentimes when the other person's incomprehensible, that's because the person's not actually understanding what they want, what they need, or what the actual dynamics of the conflict are. So they're listening to the details about what the person is saying, and either the person isn't good at communicating their own needs, wants, and desires in that relationship, or we're just simply not good at hearing it.
Mm-hmm. So again, maybe the cliff notes on how we might better understand what our, you know, our friend, our lover, our colleague wants or needs, and you know, how we might avoid these conflicts time after time.
Yeah. So first, we talked about waiting to talk. If the system's too hot, you're not going to be able to have good resolution in the moment. And sometimes we just need to be okay with that. If it's really hot, don't try to walk into your boss's office after you get an ambiguous email and you're going to say what you feel when you're really activated. Wait, and make sure you want to be very clear about what you want to say. Next, give up the idea of being right. Certainly get your viewpoint out there, but then you need to concede other people might not agree with your rightness. Three, mirror. So on the Facebook comment, mirroring means you would ask the other person, you know, it sounds like you're saying, do I have that right? Let the other person correct you and then try it again and say, okay, so you're saying, and let the other person correct you. If you're, you know, wrong, you should get through that to the basis of what the other person is actually looking for. And then don't spend too much time you're defending yourself. So I really see this. I see people say, I'm sorry I was a jerk, but, and then they go on to say why their being a jerk was justified. And that just completely pulls the apology away. And that happens over and over again. So you really need to, if you're going to say you're sorry, let it sit. A lot of times people will say they're sorry and they think that's going to be the end of it. And if the other person, so you have to know how to read the other person. There's a book on the Myers-Briggs called Type Talk at Work. And it's very similar with attachment theory. You need to know what kind of style the person you're talking to has so you can anticipate their reaction. So if you're more of an avoidant person and you just want to apologize and get on with it, the other person is more of an anxious person and they're going to have stronger emotional arousal and it's going to have their thoughts spinning a little bit more and they want to get to the bottom of it and have resolution. If you say, hey, look, I'm sorry, I was a jerk, and the other person is still activated, they might just agree with you. They might say, you know what?
You were.
You're a jerk. And then they can actually get hot all over again. And you might be thinking, well, I just apologize. My goodness, now the person is going off on me all over again. And that's because the emotional arousal is still going on. So it's really important once you apologize not to defend and allow the other person their response to you.
And you also, you know, so we kind of touched on that step number four, don't get offended by your partner's feelings, accept responsibility for how you made someone feel. But then step five, explain to your partner that you really care about him or her and you are willing to modify your behavior. Boy, that's got to be a hard one.
That is a hard one. And that's a key sticking point. A lot of people don't want to modify their behavior, especially at work, but it happens in our romantic life too, where we think that if we modify our behavior and concede that the other person has a valid viewpoint, that that somehow is making us wrong. So that puts us really in a win-lose attitude. So if we're in relationships and in conflict and we think that for us to acknowledge wrong means the other person wins, and if the other person wins, we lose, then we're stuck. So if you have the attitude that if you concede, you somehow lost something, you're never going to back down and concede your position. So if you're going to tell the other person, I don't agree with you, but I think you're right, and I understand how you would feel. So I went out with my buddies. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I understand that, you know, I wasn't home on game night to play with you and the kids, and that could make you feel like I don't, you know, value you or you're not that important to me, but you really are. I use the word but. See how easy that is to sneak in there?
Mm-hmm.
You're really important to me. I value you. I hope my other behaviors show that. And I don't think there's anything wrong with what I'm doing. But if it really has a negative impact on our relationship, then maybe I can find another way to meet my need that doesn't hurt you.
Yeah. Maybe I'll go out with my buddies when it's not game night.
Right. Or maybe I have a need for social interaction that I can get in another way.
Yeah.
Maybe we can have family friends. You know, so that's why it's important to get at the bottom of what the actual need is. There's more than one way to meet a need. And if we just give up our need, and if the guy says, or the woman, fine, then I just won't go out, that's not a winning situation. That might end the fight right then, but then the person who said they're not going to go out, they're going to be really resentful. They're going to have a hard time, and then that's going to be the impetus for another fight because you have negative emotions. You have residual, remembered hurt, and remembered conflict. And that's just going to feed into the next incident of whatever happens.
Well, we have some callers now. So Jim in Hermantown is with us. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Jim.
Hello, how are y'all?
Pretty good.
Well, my story is from the Marines, actually. I was a Marine. One of the things that I was taught, and it's lived with me for the rest of my life, and you've kind of touched on it, whenever I got into a confrontation in the military, you're taught, well, at least in the Marines, you're taught to do what you have to do at that moment, during the confrontation, and this works with my wife, works with my kids, it works at work. You deal with the confrontation, you step up, I don't want to say be the man, but be the strong adult, and just deal with the situation. And after it's done, later on, when things are calmed down or something, if it was something really against what you do, then you bring it up in a different situation, instead of during the conflict. Because if you bring it up during the conflict, you know, well, you're defending, you're being defensive. There's all kinds of arguments that will come out of that situation. And it's easier to just step up, be the adult, be the stronger person, and just, okay, sure, I'll do it that way. And you do whatever it is that that person wants you to do. And if it's something immoral, obviously you don't do it. But, I mean, you're not going to kill somebody because they said, well, you know, kill this person. But I'm saying, and it's always worked. It's worked really well. I mean, I'm ADD, so it's kind of easy for me. I don't really get bothered by what other people say or do, so I live by the moment, so I don't really have any needs except for that moment.
Yeah,
so,
well, Jim, let me follow up a little bit, because at first I thought you were saying just barrel through this thing and do what you want to do, and who cares what the...
No.
But you're saying it's the opposite. If the person you're having a confrontation or conflict with says, stop doing that, do it this way, you'll go ahead and do it that way, and then
right.
Deal with it later.
Right, and then if it and there, in a lot of situations, especially with my wife, I love her to death, I'll do whatever it is that she tells me to do. But after the fact, then I have, I don't know, I guess more fuel, or I have more, she'll have more understanding of why I thought I should do it this way. But I don't want a confrontation about it during that moment, because, like he was saying, that's what actually causes the whole thing. And it is easier for me being ADD. I don't really care. I mean, in 10 minutes, I'm going to forget the whole conversation.
Yeah, I wish it was that way for everybody with ADD. So it sounds like, Jim, that you have a really healthy relationship. So when you have a lot of trust in the bank and you have a fairly egalitarian relationship where one person doesn't feel consistently dominated, I agree with you. That's going to work great, where you can just do that. You cannot have the flare-up in the moment. And then when, you know, things are a little cooler, the immediate situation is resolved, then you can say, hey, let's talk about this because I want to explain to you why and how. Then that can go good. Sometimes what happens, though, is that one person is consistently feeling that they're on the short end of the stick in the relationship, and they tend to do what's called accommodating, where they just give up their position for the other person. And if that happens over and over and over again, you end up with somebody feeling like a doormat, and they have no voice in the relationship. So you're in a healthy relationship, so it doesn't sound like that happens. I'm guessing you take turns.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I just let it go. I mean, it is the curse, but also a gift, having ADD. So just wait, let the conflict happen, deal with the conflict, and then sometimes you'll be able to prove yourself right, but not in a mean way, but just say, well, you know, if I would have done it this way, this would have worked a little different. And it works really well. It keeps the relationship going.
You don't feel like a doormat, Jim.
Oh, no. Well, yeah. I'm ADD, so I don't really care. But, I mean, it really doesn't, because, I mean, you know the old saying, you know, a happy wife, a happy life.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, every husband should do whatever his wife wants, right, Professor Shorey? Just kidding.
Yeah, sometimes we're reversed. You know, a lot of times it's actually the other way around. But sometimes. I usually have one partner who's a little more discoursive and more prone to emotion than the other, and it's not always the woman. So I think that it's a good idea, what Jim is saying, when, you know, if that works for you in that relationship. And you really need to read your partner. So Jim's got a partner who, in the moment, his strategy is to let her have her way. And that's assuming that he can do that. So mm-hmm. it's not something that, you know, if you say that the person can have their way and their way is going to result in the bathtub falling through the floor in the bathroom, then that's probably not a good idea.
Right.
Right. So sometimes you don't want to concede if you think the other person's incorrect. And then you can have some resolution. So, you know, he's got a partner who that works with. And for them, that's excellent strategy. So learn how to read your partner, learn what their emotional response patterns are, what yours are, and, you know, stick with it and keep on trying.
Jim, thank you so much for the call. We will get to more of your calls, your questions about resolving arguments, your questions about managing conflict at work or at home or with friends. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is a psychologist who runs a private practice where he provides counseling to individuals and couples and also helps business people deal with their relationships at work. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
992.
Some of us want to apologize quickly and move on after an argument, but that doesn't always reach a resolution on why you were arguing in the first place, and you could end up arguing again about the same thing 992 times, or you might argue about the argument. We are wondering if you have found a good way to make up, a good way to manage conflict in your life, or if you have a question about managing conflict or a successful makeup. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Hal Shorey, an associate professor in the Institute for Graduate Clinical Psychology at Widener University. And now our lines are full, so let's get some more calls in. Bob in Portage. Hello, Bob.
Well, good morning. Good morning. I'd like to move the conversation from a personal relationship to maybe more of a social relationship and see if I could get some advice. When I'm at, let's just say, a restaurant or a sports bar, usually one of my social sports bars, there's always one or two who are extremely boisterous. They like to argue. No matter what somebody says about a certain sports team, they know something better about it. They use a lot of vulgar language. I'm one that sometimes I sit passively, but usually I'm known to be the one to turn and say, hey, why don't you just be quiet for a while, let everybody else enjoy the show, enjoy the game, and that sometimes fuels more problems, even though I have people around me who pat me on the back and say, way to go, Bob. I'm glad that you said something. We wanted to, but we didn't want to have him coming over and hitting us. I'm just wondering if Hal can tell me a little bit about how to effectively diffuse those people who really don't want to hear reason, but yet they're dictating the conversation in a sports bar surrounding, and you just want them to settle down and be quiet so the rest of us can enjoy the game. Is there
right.
really
so,
a way to handle that?
Well, first, do the brain transplant test. That's where you ask yourself, if I were to cut this person's, you know, anything short of cutting this person's head open, taking their brain out, and putting somebody else's brain in there, is there anything that's going to change the person's behavior? And if the answer is no, you need to move, because the person's not going to listen to reason, and you're simply not going to be able to control their behavior. The other thing is to ask yourself, what does that person need, and maybe see if you can redirect them. So if they need to be heard, they need to be the center of attention, they need to have voice, see if you can find another way to give that to them. So sometimes you can engage them in a conversation and intentionally get them talking about something else and get them focused. So you can take that same energy and just redirect it.
Good luck with that, Bob. Jill in Madison is with us. Hello, Jill.
Hi, Jill.
Hi. I was curious about a strategy for dealing with somebody who insists on making their point over and over and over and over. Like if they will explain it to you enough times, you will understand just how right they are.
Yep.
And not accepting that, you know, you hear what they're saying, but disagree with what they're saying.
Yeah, so at one point you could just ask. So we're not used to talking about the relationship as the process. You could pull it off of what their point is and actually say, I'm curious about why do you think that I'm not hearing you? Here's what I think you're saying. I understand your point. I don't agree with it, but I do hear you. Why do you feel that I'm not hearing you? Because I'm not agreeing. And then see if you can get at where they're at. I'm guessing that person might be having some kind of a emotional process going on where their anxiety level's not coming down by your answer.
Does that make sense, Jill?
Well, kind of. But then what's the strategy for, you know, walk away? Or, I mean,
I would ask them, you don't think I hear you, and you keep on saying this over and over again. Why do you feel I'm not hearing you?
Yeah, and let's say that person just says, well, you're not agreeing with me, so therefore you must not really understand what I'm saying.
Right, so, and then you can say, well, I disagree with your premises, and this is how I see the situation and how I believe. Can you be okay with that? Mm-hmm. And then that changes the conversation. So now we're going to talk about a relationship, not about the issue. Let's talk about being okay with the other person not agreeing with you. How is that so emotionally upsetting to you and dysregulating that you can't be with it? So for some reason, I'm guessing that your disagreeing is leaving that person in a state of dysregulation, and they're trying to regulate their emotions. It's an emotional dance. They're trying to regulate their emotions by getting you to conform, and you're not conforming, therefore their emotions aren't coming down. So to acknowledge that and try to change the conversation instead of the point to why can't you be okay with this?
Yeah. Well, now I wish we had more time because we have many callers, but we are at the end of our hour. Why don't you leave us with a one-minute tip on what we might do today to better manage a conflict in our lives?
Yes, know who you're dealing with. So all these strategies aren't going to apply for the same person. If the other person is more avoidant, shut down, they don't like to have discourse, and you're hot, you might need to let them walk away after an argument to calm down, and they might not be able to talk to you right then. If they're shut down, let them be shut down. Don't force the issue. And if the other person wants to talk it through and you can tolerate being with them because maybe you're the avoidant person, realize that that person needs to regulate through talking and through coming towards you. Try not to run away. Try to stay there, stay present. You don't have to agree, but try to remain in there.
I'm going to try to remain in there. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Hal Shorey, Associate Professor in the Institute for Graduate Clinical Psychology at Widener University, where he directs the Psychology and Business Joint Degree Program. You can read more about his 5 steps for a successful makeup after an argument in an article that's posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Thanks to Robin Cherry and to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.